KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
For stargazers, April 8th is going to be about as big as it gets.
This is like the Super Bowl for astronomers.
People throughout the North American continent will experience some kind of eclipse of the sun. That's rare, and it's what's making this eclipse such a special event, not just for astronomy experts like Deborah Skapik, but everyday people curious to see something that only comes along every couple decades.
It's something to experience that's causing people to come here from Europe to see this. Once you've seen it, you can't not chase them and go see another one.
Skapik is an adjunct professor of astronomy at St. Joseph's University. She's fascinated by all facets of the eclipse, like how could it affect other living species beyond humans?
When it gets darker in the day, will they respond as if it's sunset? Will birds go back to roost? Will they chirp a lot? Will the insects, you know, begin to make noises? Will the deer come out? You know, no one knows.
I'm Matt Leon, and today on KYW News Radio In-Depth, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. The April 8th solar eclipse, what to expect, how to see it safely, and what makes this eclipse different than others. So, a total solar eclipse, what falls under the parameters of this?
I can give you the scientific definition of what is happening, but it's an emotional, incredible, non-intellectual experience that I'm about to describe. So what's happening is that the moon is actually passing in front of the sun from the Earth's point of view and completely blocking it out for a narrow path of people roughly 100 miles wide that sweeps up from the southwest U.S. up to outside of Maine. But everyone in the continental U.S. will experience some kind of an eclipse that day. The people that are in the path of totality will get to see the moon completely blocking out the sun, while the rest of us will see some kind of a partial blocking.
How rare is this?
That's kind of a loaded question.
So, I apologize.
No, it's fine. It is. If you stood in the same spot on Earth all the time and you never moved, you would probably experience an eclipse once every 400 years or so. But eclipses happen roughly about 5 times a year, solar eclipses, anywhere on the Earth. But sometimes they're in inconvenient locations like Antarctica. I mean, if you want to travel there, sure, it's happening. But there are eclipse seasons during the year. There are 3 special conditions that need to be met in order to have a total eclipse of the sun. One is that the moon needs to be in a place between the Earth and the sun at its new phase. The second is that the moon needs to be at exactly the crossing spot between the Earth and the sun at a position we call a node. That's because the moon's orbit is tilted with respect to the sun and Earth. Not a lot of people are aware of that tilting of the orbit, but it's pretty extreme. And then also that the moon needs to be close enough. The moon's orbit around the Earth is not circular. And so when the moon is a little bit too far away, we would not see the sun being completely eclipsed. It would only be partial.
So the idea of totality, mm-hmm. like how are all eclipses created the same? I mean, I guess there's partials, right?
Right. All eclipses are not equal. I guess let's back up a little and say there are different kinds of eclipses. We're talking here eclipses of the sun. There are also eclipses of the moon. And one happened on Sunday, March 25th, actually, when the moon was full. The moon was moving into Earth's shadow. But shadows have 2 parts, a really dark part called the umbra, and then a fainter outer part called a penumbra. So this very not exciting eclipse of the moon when the moon went into Earth's shadow was called a penumbral lunar eclipse. And those happen pretty frequently also, but very kind of difficult to notice. So the solar eclipses, those occur when the moon passes between the Earth and the sun, and they come in different families, which is why we haven't seen one here in Philadelphia in quite a while. We saw a partial eclipse of the sun in 2017 in August, and that was not a very deep partial eclipse. The one that is about to happen on April 8th is a very deep partial eclipse. 90% of the sun is going to be eclipsed by the moon on April 8th, as seen from Philadelphia, and that's stunning.
How much will the weather matter? Like if it's cloudy that day.
That's a 5-letter word. We also don't say the 4-letter word R-A-I-N. We don't say those words.
So nope. If it is overcast, would it be ruined or would it just be really, really lessened?
I'm going to be going into the path of totality, and I will cry and do other things probably if that happens to me. But so I can tell you, you cannot see through the clouds. There's nothing that's going to allow you to do that. So just like on a day when it's very beautiful and sunny out, if a cloud moved in front of the sun and it's getting darker outside, we'll kind of notice those effects if it's clear. If it's partially cloudy and the sun is kind of playing, you know, peekaboo behind the clouds, that's still going to be okay. But a completely overcast day, you may notice some darkening, but you aren't going to be able to look up and see the crescent of the sun that's remaining once the moon is covering most of it.
And that kind of led into my next question, me looking up, because I believe 2017, my lasting impression of that eclipse is Donald Trump looking straight up from the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And but it is the thing that you take away from it from as far as a lasting image. But that is... No, I won't say no.
I want everyone to see this eclipse. That's like my goal, but safely. So there are two ways of viewing the sun, indirect and direct. Okay, so let's talk first about indirect ways, because these are the safest ways. And everybody has the equipment, I think, in their kitchen to do this safely. What you need is a colander, a strainer for pasta. And you're not looking through it at the sun. What you're doing is you're holding it out and let the sunlight shine onto the colander, just like, you know, rainwater, like you were collecting it in a bucket. And on the ground beneath, you will see overlapping images of the sun. They will look like circles on a clear day, but during an eclipse, they will look like little crescents, almost like little crescent moons. And that's absolutely the safest way and the most inexpensive way, unless you don't eat pasta and you don't have a colander. Barring that, you could take an index card and poke a small hole through it, and there you have your own projector for the solar image. So that's absolutely the safest way. Direct methods include using the safe for direct solar viewing glasses that you've seen around. And I'm going to read to you the ISO rating, if I can just find it on here. You have to have the ones that have ISO 12312-2. Okay, so it will say that on the inside. When you look through them, you can see nothing but the sun. They look like shiny mirrors.
And looking at it, they kind of have like the 3D glasses type of look, like the type of 3D glasses you might get at the movie theater.
They look like that, and a lot of people are mistaken when they see them. But again, a lot of companies are making these and selling these, or were doing that during the 2017 eclipse. And people were ordering them in bulk, finding out that, you know, only to their dismay, that they were not safe. So you want to be safe.
And I mean, there are serious consequences if you stare directly into the sun for this is not a game. Like,
no, on any day that would be true, right? But we have that kind of instinct in our bodies to look away. If we are, you know, out on a bright sunny day and the sun's coming in your eyes, you're going to squint, you're going to turn away. But I think that during an eclipse, people are tempted because they know something is going on that's interesting to see. So they might make that attempt to look directly when they really should not.
When we talk about an eclipse, we're talking about something cool to see and experience.
Mm-hmm.
Are there things happening on like a scientific level that only happen during an eclipse? Like, are there things past the, oh, that's neat, mm-hmm. that not we should be worried about, we should know about, but that are happening as a result of this?
Yes. Okay. So I can talk to you about, you know, the neat, and not just neat, but like amazing, holy cow moment stuff too. But the science that has been done historically during eclipses has been pretty shocking. So in 1919, Arthur Eddington actually used a total eclipse of the sun to confirm Einstein's theory of relativity. The way that this works is Einstein supposed that any kind of mass, matter, curves space. So we think about, you know, if you release something, it will fall to the ground, and that's gravity pulling it down. Einstein said, let's imagine gravity differently, as the Earth is curving the space, and that's what's making things draw towards it. Well, if you think about that happening during an eclipse, the sun is there in the sky curving the space around it. So stars that are more distant and kind of eclipsed by the sun itself should not be able to be seen. But that starlight was actually curving around the sun, and Eddington and others were able to see stars that they should not have seen. They were kind of popping out alongside of the sun, and that was a confirmation of a very important scientific theory. But there are other experiments that continue to go on. The outer atmosphere of the sun becomes visible during a total eclipse. That is called the corona. It means crown. That word has gotten kind of a bad reputation in the past few years, unfortunately. But the corona is about tens of millions of degrees. Okay. And so why is it so hot? It's the outer atmosphere of the sun. People are trying to understand how the corona is getting heated, because the interior of the sun is really hot. But as you go to the outer layers, it kind of cools off. We know that this is true too. And that kind of mystery has been looked at during eclipses, because we can't study it any other time except through satellites.
So give me some more, because I can tell your passion for this, like past the, oh, isn't that neat? What are some of the just kind of from a visual or from a types of things that like the average person can enjoy as a result of this?
Well, the first thing I think that is important for people from Philadelphia viewing is that it's going to get darker outside in the middle of the day in a weird way. So especially if it's a totally clear day, you don't expect that on a clear, bright, sunlit April day, and there's not a cloud in the sky, that it's going to start getting darker. Like, that would be weird. Now, if you're out in this the whole time, your eye may not perceive it so much, because your pupils do this thing, right, where when the light levels get lower, your pupil opens up. And so, you know, you can see more. So you might not notice it. But if you walked out from inside, you might be like, it's weirdly dark out here. You know, that might be kind of interesting to notice. But also, beyond that, it's not just the humans that respond to that dimming of the light. Animals will, probably will. So the question that a lot of scientists are asking and looking into is, what will animals do when it gets darker in the day like this? Will they respond as if it's sunset? Will birds go back to roost? Will they chirp a lot? Will, you know, the spring animals that we have around here, insects and things, will the frogs begin to peep or croak or whatever they do? Will the insects, you know, begin to make noises? Will the deer come out, you know, and be walking around? You know, no one knows. We'll see. And people across the country are asking this. Some scientists are studying this using devices called an audio moth, which they're placing outside to collect this data and compare the sounds that are heard during the eclipse as it approaches, as it leaves, to the sunset and sunrise sounds days prior to and days immediately following the eclipse. So all that stuff will be analyzed. Human responses, animal responses, all of that. But when it's getting dark outside, I kind of like drifted a little there. When it's getting dark outside, we'll also see things happen like you see at sunset. When the sky is getting darker, you can begin to see stars come out, or things that look like stars or people assume are stars. There are going to be some bright planets visible. And if you look toward the southwest at the eclipsed sun on that day, to the upper left, you will see something that looks like a bright star. That's the planet Jupiter. To the lower right, you'll see another even brighter thing. That's Venus. And those two things should be visible from here in Philadelphia. So don't forget to look for those. So even if you're not in the path of totality, you're not missing out on that kind of special moment and knowing that you're seeing two planets in the middle of the day, which I think is kind of cool.
We need to take a break on KYW News Radio In Depth. We will continue our conversation with Deborah Skapik in just a moment. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. This new year, discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com. Best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on KYW News Radio In Depth, let's return to our conversation with Deborah Skapik, adjunct professor of astronomy at St. Joseph's University. That path of totality, Philadelphia is in it?
Philadelphia is not in the path of totality. Okay, so just to be clear, we are not in the path of totality. The path of totality moves from Mexico through Texas, up through the middle of the country, up into Ohio, into New York, into Western New York, through Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, parts of Canada, and then out. Okay, so kind of a diagonal line. And I can give you some websites for maps to look at that. They're kind of all over the internet right now. But that's about a 100-mile wide stretch, give or take.
So the difference between what we will experience and what somebody in the path of totality will experience. Can you give us some context?
Yeah, there are a lot of memes out there about this. Being almost in totality is not like being in totality. So if you can get into totality, and about 32 million people in North America already are in that path, which is one of the things that makes this different than the 2017 eclipse. A lot more people are in there. But the difference between being in it and being not in it is kind of like the difference between being pregnant and almost pregnant. So, I mean, you know, it's a really big difference. It is a difference that I can tell you again academically what is happening and how it gets, you know, dark and the kinds of things that happen in that total moment. But it's something to experience that's causing people to come here from Europe to see this, that causes people from here to go all over the world to experience this, and caused a man that I worked for and with to go to see 36 of these in his lifetime, to travel around the world. It's once you've seen it, you can't not chase them and go see another one.
So for people in the Philadelphia area, what are the times and what will we notice specifically?
So about 8 minutes past two on Monday, April 8th, the moon will first kind of kiss the sun. Now, you could maybe with your eclipse classes notice this moment, but I would wait maybe 5 or 6 minutes after, and you'll see with the eclipse glasses a little nip taken out the side of the sun. Okay. And then that will gradually cover more and more and more of the sun, the moon moving over, until about 20 past three. And at that point, 90% of the sun will be covered up by the moon, and there'll be a very thin sliver. So the amount of darkness that you'll have at about that point will be darker than sort of stepping into the shade on a sunny day. But it won't be dark as night, like deep dark night. Be more like a twilight effect. So that's kind of what you can expect. And as I say this, you know, no one's really sure about what animals and things will be doing. So that kind of remains to be seen. And then it all reverses until about 4:30 in the afternoon. But if you're you know, thinking about things to go and look at, you're not going to stand out there and stare at this for an hour and a half, 2 hours while it's happening. But just every 5 minutes, every 10 minutes, you know, look for a visible change as the moon is covering up the sun more and more. So this is especially kind of cool for, you know, students and young folks who might want to be drawing pictures of what they're seeing and so on. Also, if you look through these solar glasses at the sun, you will see ginormous sunspots. So the sun has periods of activity. It is very active right now. And there is an active location on it right now that is causing all sorts of material to be released towards the Earth, sort of out into space. That is just not normal for the sun to do that. But also the fact that it is right around the equinox means that when that stuff approaches and arrives to Earth, it gets caught in our magnetic field in a way that it doesn't usually when we're not near the equinoxes, causing auroras. And so there have been recently incredible auroras seen all over the northern and southern hemispheres in places, polar latitudes, where they're normally not seen because the sun is just so active. But those sunspots are also things that can be seen through the solar viewing glasses.
And the sunspots and all that activity, that sounds like chapter one of a dystopian tale of how we were plunged into darkness. Is that anything to be concerned about, or is that just a high level of activity? It happens and it'll go down again and then it'll go up again?
Yeah, it does. Every 11 years, the sun goes through this. And it just happens that there's this kind of really interesting coincidence of the height of this 11-year period of solar activity occurring right when the eclipse is occurring right near the equinoxes. So you're right. It does sound like, wow, you know, some kind of weird dystopian, you know, fantasy, but it's not. It's a really cool coincidence, at least for astronomers. It gets us excited because that could mean during the eclipse also that we will see these kind of famous jets of gas that you see off the edge of the sun called prominences, these pink tongues kind of sticking out that makes the eclipse look very beautiful when we're looking at that. So the moon would be blocking the sunlight. You'd see kind of a pink-ish ring. That's H alpha. That's hydrogen light. Just with all of these neat little tongues of fire sticking off, and then the beautiful wispy white corona.
So is this like the Super Bowl for you?
I mean, it really is
something unique, but then you talk about all these things that seem to be converging. Like this is a really special event.
It is a really special and emotional event. And there is a group of folks, the Solar Eclipse Task Force, that the American Astronomical Society has those groups, that group of people came together about a decade ago to sort of plan and prepare the U.S. for these two eclipses, the 2017 one. I guess I should also add the one that came through in October, the Ring of Fire, the annular eclipse, and this one. And that group of folks is getting emotional now, kind of sad. They kind of don't want it to be over, all the preparation. It's been exhausting. It's been exhilarating. This is like the Super Bowl for astronomers, but it's also something that everyone can share in North America. Everyone here is getting some kind of an eclipse on April 8th, whether it's partial, whether it's total. But this path is covering so many people that this is going to be something that this generation does not forget happened. And everyone is working toward making that so, because I can't wait to hear people's eclipse stories. I know people, I met some folks last summer that are getting married during totality. They want their experience of their wedding to be unique because, you know, who can say they got married during a total eclipse of the sun? Like a handful of people probably, right?
Do we know when the next one would be?
The next one would be period, or the next one would be kind of coming through the U.S. So the next one coming through the U.S. that's of any import at all is 2045, but there's a total solar eclipse coming over Philadelphia in 2079.
Look forward to that.
Yeah, there you go.
That's it for this episode of KYW News Radio In Depth. You can listen to the podcast free anytime on the Odyssey app, and you can find it wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'm Matt Leon, and we'll have another episode out soon.